Episode 91 of the Steve Dudes Podcast, recorded July 19th, 2016. Rude Awakening. Awakenings, Randy.
Rude Awakenings, because we're talking about two shows this week. One is Mr. Robot, and that is all about the rude awakening of what has happened after the crazy circumstances of the Mr. Robot season finale, season one.
The 5-9 hack.
5-9 hack. What happened at the end of the, what happens to a world that's been economically changed? And then we're going to talk about Vice Principals, and the rude awakening is how badly that show sucked.
Is that the rude? Hey, that's a spoiler.
That was my rude awakening.
It's not that bad.
We're definitely going to get into all of that, and I know exactly where you're coming from with all of that. That'll be an interesting discussion, and it's a little bit weird that we're having these shows kind of paired side by side. I think thematically, it's not really fitting, but hey, Rude Awakenings.
Well, Mr. Robot is about a hacker who's maybe some split personality issues, and Vice Principals is about...
Come on.
There's nothing. There's literally nothing in common between these two shows.
You got to do the Kevin Bacon thing, because Craig Robinson is a Mr. Robot who was also in This Is the End with
Kevin Bacon. Right?
No. Danny McBride.
Okay.
I was going to say Kenny Powers.
Not the exact Kevin Bacon thing. A similar Kevin Bacon.
Robinson was also in Eastbound and Down. Hey, that other voice, though, on the podcast is Mr. Mike Moody.
Hello.
He is joining us on this week's episode to talk about Mr. Robot. Why?
Wait, because Mike Moody doesn't know anything about Mr. Robot.
Oh, what? He is an expert. He is
an expert.
He is the premier podcast you should go listen to on iTunes. If you guys get a chance, go check out Mr. Robot O, the podcast. And you can also go check it out at MrRobotPodcast.com.
That's right.
And you do that episode by per episode, like the day after, right?
Yeah, like the episodes air on Wednesday. We record them on Thursday, put them out by Friday.
That's pretty awesome.
And y'all, after we talk about Mr. Robot this week, you should go and listen to Mr. Roboto episodes 1 and 2 of season 2, because I listened to him before we did this, and it's so good, guys.
Yeah,
it's really good. He's got a security expert talking about some of the hack stuff, which was really cool, which was a really nice touch this season. And you had the Televixen guest episode on this episode. So
yeah, I'm really lucky to have really good people on there. I'm still not convinced that Ghost, who is our web expert and our hacker friend, who is a co-host, I'm still not convinced that he's not social engineering me. You know, he hasn't asked for any private data yet, but I think it's going to happen soon. So
yeah, you
don't
start with that.
No, you don't start with it.
I'm honestly a little concerned now that you say it, that he is social engineering you to social engineer me.
That's probably happening.
And then me to social engineer Grant.
He's social engineering the entire Mr. Roboto audience. So yeah.
I'm you're more than welcome to social engineer me, by the way. I could use the help. but you also do the TVI podcast.
Yeah.
Which, that's at tvipodcast.com.
Yeah, me and Nate Bliss doing that. We do that every 2 weeks, and we basically focus on one show or one specific genre. We just recorded an all Star Trek podcast.
Ooh,
where we
nice.
Talked about our favorite Star Trek episodes. That'll be out by the weekend when the movie comes out.
Have you guys considered doing an episode where you talk about two shows that have absolutely nothing in common other than some weird tangential link with Craig Robinson?
Not till today.
Yeah, that would be a rude
that's
awakening.
That's crazy.
Right there.
That's a rude awakening.
That's a great idea.
That's so terrible. But hey, we are very glad to have you on here. And before we get into all of that, we got some house cleaning to cover. First up, we want to say that we are over on iTunes. A lot of you guys are actually probably listening to us on iTunes. And if you want to help out the show, go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a little review. We'll read that here on the show. And it's a great, free, simple way to help out the show. You can also do it over on Stitcher if you are so inclined. Some people, I think, are still using Stitcher. I'm not sure if it's still around.
No.
It's all gone.
Goodbye, Stitcher.
but yes, please go over there. Another way you can help out the site is over at patreon.com/TVDudes. If you go there, you guys can make a per episode pledge, generally about $1. I think that's a great amount. That would equal about $3 to $5 a month, usually about $4 a month. It's like buying us a... What can you get for $4?
Macchiato venti with foam.
Yeah, you could buy us a coffee.
Yeah.
Or I was going to say like 3 or 4 lotto tickets.
Yeah, or 3 or 4 lotto tickets.
So anyway, you do that, and in exchange, you get bonus exclusive content from us. So each week, we guess kind of discuss something that's tangentially related, pop culture, but not generally TV. So stuff that kind of slips through the cracks for what we normally do on the episode itself.
Last week, we talked Pokemon.
Yes, we did. And then we proceeded to do a Pokemon hunt through your neighborhood for about 45 minutes.
Well, it was only 12:30 at night, so there's nothing weird about that.
I wish I was on that show.
Yeah, well, we can maybe go do Pokemon hunt again. But that was like the most exercise I've done in a month. It was miserable afterwards. My legs were burning. Yes, but we want to thank, we have a couple Patreon donors this week. First one is actually sitting to my left, I believe, Mr. Robot O.
That's me.
Hey, is this just so you could hear the episodes?
No. Well, I knew you were going to say that, but no, I've been meaning to contribute forever because I listen to you guys every week.
Oh, well, thank you.
I thought, you know, it's time.
Oh, well, we appreciate it. Wait, this is a first. We've never actually been able to say thank you to a Patreon in the room.
Yeah, it's a little awkward and it's very humbling. But thank you so much.
It's only
really
$4 a month. It's nothing to sneeze at.
You hear that, guys? It's only $4 a month. Cough it up.
Yeah.
And we also wanted to thank Kelly Van Dry, who actually upped their donation for the show. Thank you so much. That means a lot to us.
We very much appreciate it.
And with that, we are going to move on to some listener questions. So if you guys like us on Facebook and like us on Twitter, we put up a little question post once a week and you guys can ask us questions. First one I'm pulling actually off of Twitter. This one comes from our buddy Paul Mampilli across the pond. He says, hello, TV dudes. What dystopian future from television would you guys actually like to live in?
Well, there is there's a dystopian future right now that I'm seeing on most of the major networks.
Do you want to live in it, Randy?
I do not want to live in it. I didn't get a choice. So
our political cycle is fantastic.
Sorry. What do we got? Into the Badlands, Walking Dead, neither of those sound real good. Nothing with zombies, please. What other post-apocalypse have I seen?
This is a trick question, because nobody wants to live in a dystopian future, right?
I'm trying to think. Oh, you know what? Almost Human. Remember Almost Human?
Yeah.
You had robots and cool stuff.
It was partially dystopian, yeah. And that was walled off from like this nice futuristic society. So I'm guessing you don't want to live on the shit side of that wall.
I don't know. There was a lot of murder in that dystopian society. In that even the nice parts, there were a lot of murder.
Yeah. But you love murder.
I do love
murder. So I can understand why you'd want to live there.
That's exactly right. You've got it pinned down.
So that'd be your pick?
No, there's nowhere I want to. Like, Max Headroom was the show I really liked, but I wouldn't want to live in that future either. Although everybody there does watch TV, so there is that. I guess if pinned down, if forced to choose where to live, I would probably see either Almost Human or Max Headroom, because at least there'd be TV.
What about you, Mike? You have anything you'd pick?
Well, does Mr. Robot count?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because it... Well, okay. Here's the reason. Carly Chicken's there.
Well, that's true. You know, Carly Chicken's in our world, too.
Oh, yeah.
No, but we have Trump. Remember? We have Trump.
Yes. Carly Chicken's going to be in our post-apocalyptic world, along with the rest of us.
There you go.
That's true.
I don't know. It's a dystopian future, like you said. There's got to be some comedy that makes a great, like, Last Man on Earth kind of thing.
Last Man on Earth is depressing as hell. I don't want to live there.
It gets funnier. once he's not actually the last man on Earth.
Are we talking about the show now or the world?
Well, if it was just me, I could read all the book I want. Yeah, I read really slowly. It'd probably be one book before I die.
It's like got Betty Draper.
Yeah, there you go.
That's true.
I'm just coming off like a horn dog now. There's a girl there.
I thought you were making points against, because it's actually Betty Draper.
Oh, no.
All right, let's move on to our next question. This one comes to us from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, hi, dudes. Can we agree that Mr. Robot and Hannibal are TV series atypical to the usual programming on their respective networks? What was the show or shows that made you think or audibly say, why the hell is this on insert channel here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that both of those, it's weird that Mr. Robot's on USA. They're trying to rebrand, but it is weird.
I mean, we could go back and say, like, when Breaking Bad first broke onto the scene on AMC, it was like, what? AMC?
Yeah.
They do original programming? What is this?
That kind of made sense, because they were trying to establish their brand at the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, we're not just airing old movies anymore. We have shows.
okay, this is not a good example. It's not an example of a good show. But remember Charlie Sheen's comedy on FX?
Yeah, Anger Management.
Anger Management. That was one of a, what are they doing here? You guys do so many good shows. What are you doing with this show?
Making- yeah, but they had a couple misfires before that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, so over on Lifetime, and I haven't watched this show yet.
Talking about Unreal?
But Unreal is, like, everyone's raving about this show.
Everybody loves that's
Unreal.
A good, that's a good show.
Yeah. Do you watch it?
I've seen a few episodes. It's right? very good.
I hear it's yeah. great.
It's very good. Very dark.
Oh, yeah. You know what, actually? Supergirl on CBS. Supergirl did not belong on CBS. Supergirl always belonged on the CW.
Yeah.
And it did not, even the
it
way...
It didn't disappoint fully?
Yeah, it just didn't, it didn't feel like a CBS show.
No.
To some extent, Person of Interest, which I'm now watching, does not feel like a CBS show.
Every time CBS has a good show, I'm like, this is on CBS?
Yeah, yeah.
I have a good one, though. You guys remember American Gothic in the 90s?
Yeah.
90s supernatural drama created by Sam Raimi on CBS.
That was CBS?
That was CBS.
In my head, that was Fox.
Nope. Gary Cole as the devil tormenting this small western town. Yeah.
I'd forgotten that.
The Nick over on Cinemax.
Yeah.
Like, Cinemax isn't really known for a lot of its original programming.
Yeah.
But because it's owned by HBO, this was a show that HBO just didn't have room in its lineup for, so it got kicked over to there.
Yeah.
And I think that's starting to pave the way for hopefully a lot more impressive work over at Cinemax.
Yeah, you're right. Because I think, I mean, Cinemax has, like, Banshee, and Banshee belongs on Cinemax.
Yeah.
And Strike Back. Strike Back belongs on Cinemax. But yeah, The Nick is more cerebral than what they generally do.
Yeah, they're usually doing just Skinemax stuff.
Yeah.
I hear.
Well,
I'm not sure.
I
you're correct.
I love, for the record, both Banshee and Strike Back, but there's plenty of sex in those.
Yeah.
And violence. So.
You're correct.
All right. Next question comes to us from Ross Brown, who says, "Hi, TV dudes. I tried watching Mr. Robot and Billions. I thought they were both good and can't think of any particular criticisms. However, I just can't get into them for whatever reason. Have you guys ever had a similar experience?"
Yes, with the show you just mentioned, The Nick.
The Nick.
I couldn't.
That's so true.
The Nick is great. It's so well done. And it has, it's Steven Soderbergh, one of my favorite filmmakers, and Clive Owen, who I love. And I could not watch it. I just got so bored.
It was boring.
For me, I don't know why. It's, like I say, I acknowledge it is absolutely great.
Yeah, it's
but
fantastic.
It just can't plug into it.
You know, I generally have problem with, like, period piece shows.
Yeah.
And that one seems to rise above, I think, in large part because of the soundtrack. Soundtrack is so discordant and modern that it seems to kind of, like transport that show into a different realm for me that makes it so much more watchable.
Yeah.
Well, that's
Mike, any of those you've had a...
We were talking about it earlier off mic. I'm kind of having that issue with Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the new Netflix show.
Really?
Yeah, I liked it a lot, but I watched it a few days ago, and I didn't feel compelled to keep going, you know?
It wasn't tickling that nostalgia boner for you? That's not an expression. I don't know where that came from.
Tickling the nostalgia boner. That should be our new. That's going to be the catchphrase for TV Dudes.
That should be the new title of this episode.
TV Dudes, tickling your nostalgia boner.
I liked it. I think the thing I liked best about it were the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked all the references the kids were making. I felt like I was one of those kids. I liked that a lot. But I don't know, the supernatural element just felt kind of generic to me, and it didn't pull me in like I wanted it to, but I'm still going to give it a chance, but I'm not, like, super compelled to watch it all.
I watched all of it in 2 days, for the record.
All right.
And we're going to talk about that, I believe, on the next episode.
Yes. So. I have not finished. I only have a couple episodes, but I so want to. It's just that there's so much else I also had to kind of catch up on this week in order to discuss it.
Go ahead.
Oh, I also went into it with the... kind of a bad feeling because it's written and directed by the Duffer brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the guys who largely wrote a bunch of episodes of Wayward Pines.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which to me is just one of those really crappy, shitty summer shows that makes no sense. It's really fun to watch, but not very ambitious. You know, it's like a good piece of shit. So so I'm watching Wayward Pines. So I'm watching Stranger Things, and I have it in the back of my head, like, this show is going to shit the bed just like Wayward Pines, isn't it? So maybe that's unfair. It's probably unfair.
I don't think it goes that way, but I also didn't hate Wayward Pines.
Yeah, I was going to say, Randy liked Wayward Pines.
I do.
That was one of those shows I just went, can't do it.
Yeah. No, I liked Wayward Pines, although Mike's not entirely wrong about it. It is forgettable summer TV, and I'm no desire to watch season two.
It is like a really good piece of shit.
Yeah. It wasn't like The Dome, Under the Dome.
Oh, yeah, when you pinch it off, you're like proud of yourself.
Yeah. So Real Rob, that was the other one, Randy, that we had to make sure we mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of those great shows. It's just hard to kind of like
hard
really
to plug.
Get that hook.
Well, you know, the thing is, once you get a few episodes in and you start to see all the nuance and all, you have to go back. You have to like watch the first episode to get all the layers that are really by the fourth episode starting to hit.
It's that end like twist that makes you go, whoa, I was watching this in like the completely wrong way.
Like when in episode four, when George Lopez hits Real Rob in the balls with a golf club.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen episode one where George Lopez is shopping for a golf club, you've really missed all the setup. By the way, I have no idea if that actually happens, but I bet it does.
You're probably dead on.
So your message to people struggling, trying to get through Real Rob is, you can do it. Apologies.
You apologize for nothing, sir. Zach McLernan asks us, so apparently The Night Of was originally to have John Turturro's role played by James Gandolfini and the detective by Robert De Niro. However, the death of Gandolfini led to the show being shelved and De Niro leaving. The show was finally recast and picked back up a few years ago. Would you have wanted to see this show, or is it fine as it is?
Yes, is my answer to both of those. It is fine as it is, but holy shit, De Niro and Gandolfini? Oh my God, that would have been amazing.
It would have been a different tone.
Yeah.
I don't see how they would have given such different performances.
Yeah.
And yeah, that would be fascinating to see. Man, I kind of want to see a show that's like, you get the exact same show, the exact same script, and you have two different like sets of actors and directors make it.
Yeah.
And just see how differently they kind of get an end product.
Yeah.
I think that'd be so fascinating.
Yeah, I am not usually a shot-for-shot remake type guy, but, and I wouldn't want this to be not shot-for-shot either, but same script, same actors. I would love to see somebody do that project. That'd be really interesting.
The show is so good. The Night Of, every episode, I get to the end, I'm like, fuck, I wish I had enough restraint so that I could binge watch this at the end of the series.
I haven't watched episode two yet because I had to watch all Stranger Things first, but it is on my to-do list.
I haven't started it, so
it's okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
Do yourself a solid and wait until it's done because, man, every episode I just want to go, I need the next one.
Oh, it's a mini. What, there's like four?
Eight
okay.
episodes.
All right, our last question comes to us from Kyle Volte, who says, hey, TV dudes. Hey, Randy, forgive me for my question, but work has me in an evil mood. Okay. If you could get a new season of Terriers, but for each new season, you had to watch two new seasons of Real Rob, how many seasons of Terriers would you be willing to suffer for?
I don't know what it says about me that I'm prepared with my answer for this question, but I believe that a good show runs about five or six seasons and should not run any longer. So I'm going to say that means I'd have five more seasons of Terriers, 10 seasons of Real Rob. I could do it. I could do it for Terriers.
I feel like this isn't fair, Kyle. What you should have said is per episode, he has to watch two seasons.
Oh, that's hard. That's harder.
Could you put in those kind of hours for the rest of us?
Then I could handle one more 13 episode season if that was the requirement. 26 episodes of Real Rob. 26 seasons of Real Rob in exchange for 13 episodes of Terriers.
And you have to watch them all, man.
Oh, my God.
Ooh, that's rough.
Oof. Okay, maybe one last six episode season to wrap everything up. That's rough. That's rough.
I wonder how much that would age you.
All right, we got some news here. First of all, Netflix's Making a Murder is getting more episodes.
Ooh, something saucy's happening in that case.
Well, here's the weird thing to me. I thought, okay, are they going to do a different case or something? No, it's more of like the guy who clearly did it.
Mm-hmm. Is that where we've landed on that?
Yeah, that's where I've landed.
He did it.
He totally did it. I mean, I had sympathy for his nephew, and I feel bad about the justice system, but that guy totally did it. So I don't really want to watch more of him and his family. I found his family off-putting and don't really want more episodes of it. But at the same time, like, I don't know what else you'd do. So I don't know that I wanted more of this.
Yeah, I think that you the show, are coasting off of such a great high. Everyone really enjoyed the season. Now you're just going to kind of fuck it up.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. Yeah, so it's weird.
I think it kind of makes sense that they're following the same case because did you guys listen to Serial?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you listen to Serial Season 2?
Yes.
I didn't like when they deviated to do the like half-assed reporting about the trial, though, because they only did like 2 episodes of it.
Yeah.
And it just seemed more like her talking in a closet with her assistant.
Right.
Just speculation rather than like any reporting.
I agree. I actually liked the second season of Serial.
Okay, because I know it wasn't as successful as the first season.
Oh, the Bergdahl stuff itself.
I thought it was fascinating because it was a look, just like Serial, the first season was a look inside the justice system and some of the issues with cops interrogating and that kind of thing. I thought that Bergdahl's story really looked into sort of the nature of like military service and how we don't really deal well with soldiers with mental issues and that kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, but it didn't feel like it should have been housed in the same thing as Serial, I guess.
It didn't have the same strong hook.
I wish they would have rebranded, made another show to tackle the Bergdahl case, because what they established with what Serial I thought was going to be, it felt a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why people were put off by it. My wife stopped listening to it.
Yeah,
but I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was really interesting.
I'm sure it's good. I haven't heard it. I just know that it wasn't as popular.
No, not remotely.
So it makes sense that Making a Murderer is going to continue with the same. You know, they're kind of...
Sure.
He was kind of inspired, maybe, by Serial. Yeah.
Okay, so Star Trek, the new Star Trek TV show, and all Star Trek, has their international rights been picked up by Netflix. So if you want to watch Star Trek, you need Netflix. Unless you're in America or Canada, in which case, fuck you, you need CBS All Access.
Is it that we're not going to get it here in the U.S.?
We're going to have CBS All Access.
I thought that we're going to get it for 24 hours.
No.
Or that's just the international
audience. That's just the international.
Ah,
yeah.
Raspberries.
They've done this before with From Dusk Till Dawn, the El Rey show, where they slap it on Netflix 24 hours later, but only for international. Yeah.
Well, and they do that not just for that, but several shows. I want to say, like... something big like Better Call Saul, maybe.
Yeah,
is the same deal. Like 24 hours later, it goes up on Netflix internationally, but not here.
So, are you guys going to buy CBS All Access for Star Trek?
Maybe we'll get a shared account.
You know, I'm.
That's against the law.
I was talking to my wife about this earlier, and I'm still thinking the end game here. CBS and CW are the same network, basically. I mean, they're the same owner, a lot of the same ownership. If they are going to put the CW shows on streaming on All Access. That plus Star Trek would get me to buy CBS All Access.
They would make a shitload of money if they did that.
It's the smart move. It's the smart play because, really, there is no way to watch. If you don't have cable, there is going to be no way to watch Flash, iZombie, Arrow, Supergirl, all that stuff day of. Like, there is no way unless you buy something through Amazon or through iTunes. And why would Viacom want to give that money up? Does Viacom have a stake in iTunes? I don't really know. But to me, it makes sense that it's not on Netflix. There's a market to be served, and it would bring people to their CBS All Access. Because Star Trek's one thing, but if you get the Star Trek fans and the DC Comics fans, that's a big chunk of the audience.
That'd be pretty smart.
So that's my hope. I don't think it's really going to happen.
So are you saying, though, that I can't share my All Access account with Randy? Well, like, we can't have a shared account? That's illegal?
It depends. The Justice Department just came down on that. You know that, right?
Yep.
I don't know because I don't pay attention to the news.
Yeah, the Justice Department has said that there was a case that was it Supreme Court, Mike, that went before?
I think so.
That basically said that, sharing your passwords is a security issue and considered illegal.
It's a security issue, that's right.
So we're going to have to get married.
Yeah.
I think that's the only option, Randy.
Okay.
So are you going to propose to me or what?
I thought you just proposed to me.
Nope.
That's what I heard.
I expect a ring next week. Get on it.
The thing is, like, HBO and Netflix are still basically out there saying, no, share your passwords. We're not going to prosecute you, which means it essentially is legal. But if they ever decide they want to prosecute us, they could.
Okay.
But they won't.
But they won't. All right. Speaking of Netflix, they added a new mixtape feature called Flixtape.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know you were experimenting with.
I did. You know, I had a little bit higher expectations for what I thought this was going to be.
Me too.
Yeah, it turns out you can only add like about like 6 shows. The interface kind of sucks. You have to like really like do your own research and like searching for stuff very specifically. It doesn't like give you a great rolling list of suggestions. So, yeah, it was kind of lame. I made a link. I sent it out. I included this in the news before I kind of like fully explored it.
Yeah.
And then it went, that's disappointing.
So the headline really should read, Netflix adds disappointing feature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At first, it sounded really great to me. Like, wow, I can create a playlist of TV episodes under a theme and like share them with my friends and family. This is very me. I'm in. And then I tried it and it kind of sucks because...
Yeah, it's like, here's 6 shows I've watched.
Well, it's weird because the way it works is that you can first select a title for your mix, right?
Yeah.
And then Netflix automatically adds 3 shows, not episodes of shows, 3 shows based on your title. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that it interprets what you want in your mix from what you name it. So I named mine The Best of Buffy, thinking I could like add awesome Buffy episodes.
Sure.
And Netflix gives me That 70s Show, Haven, and the movie The Other Sister. What the fuck?
Okay.
Is that the Rosie O'Donnell one?
No, that's the one with fucking Giovanni Ribisi. And,
Okay, but Mike, what you have just described, I believe that people can have some fun with this feature because now what you need to do is find the craziest names for your playlist and see what Netflix will give you.
It is a fun thing to play with. I typed in Republican, and it gave me Y Tu Mama Tambien, the Mexican comedy drama Instructions Not Included, and Eddie Murphy's Raw.
Yeah, it's perfect.
No,
that makes sense.
Is it just random?
I don't know. I typed in My Dick Hurts.
See, Mike quickly went where I would. It's like, let's fuck with the AI at this point.
And it gave me Forrest Gump, The Carrie Diaries, and this one makes sense, The Nut Job.
There you go. Okay. Wow, ridiculous.
Weird.
All right, finally, we have some very interesting news about Game of Thrones. Not the disappointing news. Everybody knows now that it's not going to be till summer 2017 and that it's going to be only 7 episodes. So we've all braced for that, I think. But the ratings for each episode of Game of Thrones Season 6 were higher than any of the show that had gone before.
For one of the biggest shows on TV?
So the ratings went from an average of 20 million viewers per episode to a whopping 25.1 million viewers each for Season 6. The interesting thing about this is that this is the first, I think it's the first season that's been available on HBO Now because HBO Now just popped up.
That's true.
And they point out that it's so popular, this is on Screen Rant, that almost 40% of the season 6 viewership was through the HBO digital platform. While the combined apps of HBO Now and HBO Go have a viewing activity up 91% from season 5.
That's not just domestic viewership,
right? No, that's everybody.
Okay.
Do you know what that realizes? You know what it means, right? It means that if we look at the numbers, there are generously 5 million, maybe conservative 2 to 3 million people who are just watching streaming. Like, they just watch streaming shows.
Yeah.
Like, they captured that audience. It means that everybody needs to be paying a lot more attention to streaming and doing better with it because there is an audience out there that does not want to watch traditional TV, that just wants to watch streaming.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense because in the zeitgeist, Mr. Robot is huge, right? Sorry, I'm talking about my show, but it's huge, you know, but I don't think even 1 million people watched it live.
Right.
You know, but it's still in the zeitgeist. It's still a very popular show, but people aren't watching this thing on TV. They're streaming. They're watching it other ways. You know, there has to be more than 1 million people watching it and downloading it, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, the download audience, the streaming audience is growing. That's where the audience is. That's where I am.
Mm. Well, that's the thing is that I think the audience is definitely out there for the people who are watching streaming shows are engaged viewers.
Totally.
These are not people who are turning on the TV and then having sex while it's on. No. Okay. They might be, but that's a kink. That's a deliberate thing.
Only during Walking Dead.
That's a very specific kink. But they're not like turning it on and having his background while they do other stuff. Like streaming, you're watching streaming TV. Mm-hmm. You chose to watch that show. And I think that that's what's missing, is that you're getting much more engaged viewers in streaming. And that's why, you know, even if it's a lower number, you're getting people who, you're getting those direct eyeballs. It's like, it's a more focused number. And the question is, of course, how do you make money on that? And the answer is, you sell them the service. Like, that's why HBO Now is so smart. That's why we're slowly but surely seeing everybody adding streaming networks. That's why CBS All Access is launching.
You know, it's also kind of crazy that they're getting 25
million? 25 million per episode.
Per episode. And when we were at ATX last year, not this year, Damon Lindelof was talking about the show Leftovers getting 700,000 viewers.
That was a really low number.
Also on HBO.
Yeah.
They're getting less than a million per episode, like down from their 2.5 at the top.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same network.
Yeah, but Game of Thrones breaks so many rules as far as what people watch. Like, there are people who are watching Game of Thrones, like, that's the only show they watch on TV.
Yeah.
You know?
Because there's dragons.
There's dragons.
I keep trying to tell Damon, put dragons in your show.
Yeah, that's how that restraining order got issued, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Game of Thrones is the Pokemon Go of TV. It's very popular, and it has dragons.
That's the way to go, I guess, nowadays. We need dragons in our podcast.
TV Dudes and Dragons.
Kenny Powers is back, Randy.
Yeah, he is. He's back, and now he's vice principal.
He's back as a vice principal. So it's Danny McBride working once again alongside his cohort Jody Hill, the guy who helped him direct all of Eastbound and Down over on HBO. Now they are working on a new show called Vice Principals with Walton Goggins, and he plays Neil Gamby. I'm not sure if it's as good a name as Kenny fucking Powers. But it's pretty good.
Not nearly as good.
Not nearly as good. I think maybe it was Neil fucking Gamby. That might change it a little bit.
Not nearly as good is going to be the theme of this entire review.
So, okay. We have Bill Murray as the principal of this high school, and he's retiring. And so Danny McBride and Walton Goggins are the two vice principals vying for the top position. And the position ends up going to an outsider played by Kimberly Hebert Gregory, who plays Dr. Belinda Brown. She takes over, and we just see Danny McBride acting like a giant man-child throughout the episode, wanting to be the head boss. And yeah, what'd you think, Randy? I know you have opinions here.
I hated this so much. I almost didn't finish watching it. If we were not talking about it on the show, I would have gotten 10 minutes into this piece of shit and turned it off. I hated this so much.
It's not really a piece of shit. I mean, it's just kind of a wet fart of a show. It's like, there's not really much to hate. There's really nothing there, you know? I mean,
I don't know. I was able to hate it.
Okay.
I was able to.
The hate is strong with you.
So what rubbed you the wrong way about this?
It was Danny McBride. I didn't like He's Spending Down. I've only seen an episode or two, but I couldn't plug into it. Danny McBride's whole...
Do you like him in anything?
I liked him a little bit in This Is the End.
Tropic Thunder,
a little bit of Tropic Thunder. But the thing is, he always plays the same character.
Yeah.
And which makes me think it's not a character, which makes me like him less.
It is a character from my understanding, but it's something he just does really well. I think that he genuinely riffs his lines effortlessly
So
it's just kind of film him and say go, and he will just talk shit. Which is kind of funny because you see these little back and forth between him and Walton Goggins. And I feel like they are just trying to like out-insult each other, and Walton Goggins sucks at it.
Well, Walton Goggins, this is so outside of Walton Goggins' wheelhouse.
He did some cameos on Sons of Anarchy, where he plays a trans man woman, I guess.
He was so good in that.
Yeah, it was actually kind of good, but he also goes for like a big comedic punch, which also seemed a little bit outside of like what we're used to seeing him in The Shield, et cetera, and Justified. So I can see that he has comedic chops. It's just I don't like the character he's playing in here and how he stands against Danny McBride.
You don't like his character?
I like him less, actually. I like Danny McBride, though.
I spent every minute of this show wishing someone would run Neil Gambio over the car.
How do you feel about it, Mike?
I don't hate it as much. I think it could have been like a 10-minute Funny or Die sketch, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, it's going to be 18 episodes.
Is it 18?
It's 18, but they're splitting it up into two seasons,
yeah, yeah,
and then it's over.
I was so happy to hear about that,
mm-hmm,
that it's over.
That's the plan. It's going to be over.
Why are,
yeah,
you so happy? You don't have to watch it.
But the thing is, here's the thing.
What talent are you missing out on?
Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins.
I thought he was really funny in this.
But I don't want him in this. I want him in a show I want to watch.
Yeah, but this is just like a little one-off project he's,
yeah,
doing.
Once,
know?
I knew that, I was much happier. Busy Phillips. I always like Busy Phillips. And again, she plays the same character too. She plays sort of a white trashy girl. But I liked her. Okay. I prefer Busy Phillips in Cougar Town to Busy Phillips in this HBO show. That is not a sentence anyone should say.
Isn't it, though? I thought
Cougar Town's all right.
In Cougar Town.
No, she's great in Cougar Town, but in no way is Cougar Town supposed to be the pinnacle of someone's career.
That's true.
She was in Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, she was in Freaks
really
and Geeks.
Good.
That's true.
Also, her new husband... is from Boardwalk Empire, for God's sake.
Eli, that guy...
what's his name?
He is hilarious on this show.
I love him, but I don't want him doing this.
No, I mean that's true, but I thought he also does a great job because he's kind of this Ed Hardy wearing like way too old but trying to be cool thrash skater dad.
But with a heart,
yeah. He's douchey. He looks douchey, but he's actually like a genuine nice guy.
Yeah, he looks like Danny McBride's character acts.
Yeah.
If
there
you
put
those personalities together, it would make perfect sense.
Well, I mean, I'm always fascinated by Danny McBride. I feel like he's a force of nature that drives shows, and I loved him in Eastbound and Down. I know that you really didn't like it, but it's all contingent upon whether or not you can enjoy an asshole just being an asshole in a show.
Yeah.
You know, we discussed this
on my Facebook, and the thing is, I thought I could. Like, I love Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and those people are horrible people.
You liked House, right?
I've never seen House.
Oh, yeah?
I've never seen House.
Well, you would like House because...
He's funny.
He's an asshole all the time to people, but he's always right.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what it is. This particular version of unlikable douchebag, if the show was like 20% Danny McBride and 80% Walton Goggins and the other characters, I'd probably be more okay with it. But this is very much Danny McBride's show.
I feel like he is responsible for Will Ferrell doing all his man-child movies, subsequently.
Yeah.
Because his first movie was like, Legend of the Foot Fist Way or something like that.
Yeah, Kung Pao.
Yeah, sort of like that. And he's been playing sort of this man-child character since then, and Will Ferrell's like one of the people who kind of discovered him.
Yeah.
And since then, Will Ferrell's done a lot of kind of copies of this kind of character. And I always feel that Danny McBride does it so much better.
Well, increasingly, I hate Will Ferrell's movies, and that's probably why he's playing those. Like, I liked Anchorman.
But they are getting worse and worse.
But they're
getting
worse and worse.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is, I don't have any interest in watching Man Children because that's what I can do on the internet. I can go to Twitter and watch that right now.
Yeah,
I can go post a positive review of Ghostbusters. I can see exactly what you're going to see in Vice Principals.
I'm kind of with Grant, though. I'm a fan of Danny McBride. I really loved Eastbound and Down. And with Vice Principals, even though there's no meat to the show, that's my issue. I don't care about the story. There's nothing to latch onto. But I did laugh my ass off at least 3 times.
Yeah.
Just because he's walking around talking really nasty shit to kids. that was great. That one scene where he basically threatens a kid and says, you know, you're going to be in ISS and you're going to get anally raped. And we're going to...
It's terrible.
And you're going to be biting down on a textbook and you better do what I say. That is so not cool that it's funny.
It's and it's very much Danny McBride and Jody Hill kind of sense of humor. Mm-hmm. It's not for Randy.
It is not for me.
This episode, I agree with, more with Mike. It's a weak episode that, totally. That kind of fails to sell what you kind of want to root for. Whereas, like, the first episode of Eastbound and Down, you kind of get a sense that, like, this guy was at the top and now he's fallen from grace. And you kind of, in a sense, want him to reclaim it because he's a sad sack. And here, it's just that he's an asshole who feels that he should have a position of power, but we've seen no real evidence that he in any way deserves it. So I'm not rooting for him. And Walton Goggins' character seems kind of scummy. I'm not rooting for him either. So I'm not rooting for anyone yet in any regard. So I don't know how to feel about the first episode.
What'd you guys think of Bill Murray?
Dismissive?
It's every Bill Murray part we see now, which is a Bill Murray collecting a paycheck role.
Half asleep. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Bill Murray wakes up occasionally and does something really interesting, but this was not it. Usually he's just doing the, I'm Bill Murray, hi.
Yeah, and he's in a scene where they weren't funny either. Like, none of the intro was funny.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, it establishes who the characters are, but nothing's funny.
Yeah.
They're having a little slap fight during the Pledge of Allegiance.
My bar for comedy at HBO is pretty high right now because it's Veep and it's Silicon Valley. This didn't even hit Ballers level.
Oh, no.
You should give Ballers another chance, by the way. Well, okay. I think we've kind of said enough about that show then. Let's go ahead.
Are you going to keep watching?
I am. I mean, I want to give this a couple more episodes because, like I've already said over and over, I'm really like their collaboration and the work that kind of comes from those two, McBride and Jody Hill. So I want to see if they can kind of work out what they want to do with this.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But Mr. Robot is back, and this is pretty exciting. So the other day, Randy,
yep.
I saw that Snapchat was releasing the first hour of this on Snapchat. So I decided, okay, I guess I should download this Snapchat app. No, I already had it, but I never use it. But anyway, I think this is honestly the first time I've ever used Snapchat was to go and watch the first episode. And so I watched it on my phone, and I was just thinking about how much you would hate the fact that I watched
that
the first episode
so
on my phone.
That is so messed up. That is so messed up.
Especially since it's such a beautiful show.
Yeah.
It looks great when it's large.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And the cinematography, like, everything about it is so great.
You know, there were other options, right?
Yeah, I could have watched it through YouTube, I guess, too, on my laptop, something like that.
Well,
YouTube's on your TV, man.
Yeah.
I went to the first one I read about, Snapchat. Right. I don't care. I have kids in the house. I have to be quiet all the time, so I watch it on my phone wherever I want.
Oh, man.
I watched it through YouTube on my PS4 and my big 60-inch, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked good.
So, yeah, let's discuss the show.
So, the first thing I want to say about it is that I was worried because first seasons of a really ambitious show that sticks the landing, but yet leaves us with questions, this could easily have been just a disaster. It could have come back and been a mess because you've got to, even with Sam Esmail, because originally this was a movie. Like, Sam Esmail had a story and he told it. Mm-hmm. And I worried, like, are they going to get in the writer's room for season two? And he's going to go, yeah, that was what I had. I don't know where we go from here.
That was never going to be an issue because the first season was the first act of the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said this many times in many interviews.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
And he's actually, the first season is the prologue of the movie. He said, and
what?
We're just getting to the story I want to tell. We're getting to the big story that was in my movie script.
Wow. So the first act was just Fight Club.
Well, and that's the thing is that this is what happens when Fight Club ends.
Right.
And I'm fascinated to see that.
In a really profound way, actually, what you just said. And we're going to get into that in a bit. Hey, by the way, anyone who hasn't watched this show or is a little squeamish about spoilers, we're going to spoil a lot.
We're going to spoil it. We're also going to speculate because there's some speculation. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we are. We'll give another warning when we go full-blown speculation, but just a little heads up.
I know a fair amount about Mike's thoughts on this, although we should probably let our listeners in on those, but the two-part thing was interesting because I did not watch the release. I watched it all together as one big episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this was one episode. Like, I almost wonder if USA broke it up, if originally this was one two-hour premiere and it was broken up by network management, basically, because they come to an intermission and then they go. And because Angela's not in the first episode at all. Craig Robinson's character is in the first episode. Tyra Wellick is really not in the first episode at all. Nor is his wife. I mean, all these characters are introduced that were, they're so important. We really don't see much of them in that first hour.
Yeah, and I watched the first episode about a week before I watched the second episode.
Yeah.
So it really, the first episode did not have as big a punch as the second episode, especially that intro to the second episode. That was, I think, my favorite scene of the two-hour premiere is the Phil Collins song with the burning money.
God.
It was just shot in such a way, and the music, like how it swells and then it drifts away and then it swells again with the big punch of what's going on.
Yeah.
It was just such a simple scene, but it kept you on edge.
Yeah.
It really did. Sam Esmail, just like, and I said this on my podcast, kind of like Vince Gilligan in Breaking Bad, just with simple scenes, he can really make you feel so much suspense.
Well, because, this guy's in the middle of a public park. But he is as unsafe as he's ever been.
Right.
His security is not up to the job. They're going to lose him. And you know they're going to lose him. And we don't know what's in that bag. We don't know what's going on.
I was like, it's a bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then as soon as like he was acting super careful about it, I was like, okay, maybe it's not a bomb.
Yeah.
That would be the giveaway too soon, I guess.
So I want to ask the point of this for the folks over at F Society.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a PR coup so that they can have, look how little they give a shit about money. They're burning 5.9 million dollars in the middle of the park. That's how little they care about you, about your money. Or is it just a power play? Because the thing is, like, I thought when he laid all that money down, I thought the instruction was going to be leave all the money in the park. Walk away, give it out to the people. Because Darlene, I thought she was feeling guilty that they had kind of screwed over the consumers and that she was wanting to get the money out to the people, get cash out of the people.
Yeah, that's what you're supposed to think.
Yeah,
and then a twist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where you see that, F Society are kind of anarchist bad guys. I mean, they're sympathetic as that we're, they're maybe better than the corporate weasels over at E Corp, but they're still, especially the bros who are running around with the bulls balls, kind of dicks.
Well, I felt like the first episode went a long way to establishing that they don't need money.
Yeah.
They're kind of walking on the edges of society, and they can... they had that really well-shot sequence where the E-Cor lady was running through the park.
Yeah.
And Darlene's in the background on a bench, and she's hacking presumably into like her watch or her smartwatch or something so that she can hack into the house and take it over. Like they are able to just gain access to these places because they are superhero hackers in a way.
And also in that same scene, we see that there's people out in the street setting up tents to barter. And there's like an alternative form of currency already happening,
right?
You know, which is kind of what, like, if you go back to the season one finale, Christian Slater talks about how we don't need money. We need to obliterate money, and we all need to come together and have kind of a society where not necessarily we barter, but we really depend on each other face to face. We have like a real community that brings each other up, and it's not based on money. So I think that's what the money burning was about.
Right.
It's a really great idea, a great ideal. Does it work in the real world? I think we're seeing that it doesn't.
Well, that's why I think it's interesting, is because economics, the economy is so complex that even people as smart as the hackers of society can't really wrap their heads around everything that's going to happen.
Mm-mm.
Or maybe don't care. But I don't know about you guys. I remember 2007 when it looked like the sky was falling. Like I just bought my business.
Right.
And I remember thinking, we're all doomed. You know, getting a loan was really hard. And if something happened like the end of Fight Club or the 5-9 hack where people suddenly can't use credit cards, that kind of thing, my business would be out in a week. Like everybody, I would love to have my mortgage and that kind of thing wiped out. But at the same time, my mortgage payments are way less than the amount of money I spend on credit cards or have coming in from credit cards.
Always thinking about yourself.
Right? Always.
But what you're not saying anything that's wrong, because from what we've seen, F Society's goal, this hack, is a really juvenile idea.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we get this little speech by Philip Price, I guess he's the CEO of E-Corp.
Yeah.
And he's talking about like how you know, it is needed, like, that he's able to manipulate these markets. People don't recognize how integral it is that they kind of have this face to that. And you think that you can just get rid of someone like him and everything's going to be okay. But he's how it kind of keeps driving it forward.
You're talking about the scene in the White House where he's talking to the government people?
No. Oh, it's in the White House? Yeah, I guess.
Because I want to talk about that because Mike was not a fan of that scene.
I thought it went a little too broad. I thought he went a little too broad. I thought that the writing went a little too broad. It was so much like speechifying for speechifying's sake. Like, they made the point of the scene pretty early on,
yeah,
and then kept repeating it and repeating it. See, I was like, I get it, man.
I am. You talked about this with Ghost over on Mr. Roboto, and I'm Team Ghost on this one. I actually think that exact conversation and those exact tones probably took place during the TARP bailouts.
Oh, I agree.
It seems so real to me.
Okay.
And in a way that I found very effective because I was like, oh, these guys are trying to lord over their power and they're finding out they don't have any. And I feel like that kind of thing probably happened exactly that way. And
like, so you have to show your peacock feathers.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That he was over the top, but it was deliberate. He was basically, you know, doing his Christopher Walken speech, doing the this is how it is, and you guys need to shut up and leave me alone. Let me do my job.
What I thought was kind of interesting is we got two of these speeches, one in each episode, and there might have been more that I just can't recall. But it's like two characters that kind of do that. I guess what you're saying is a little bit of a trope where they give a parable. They're right. Like, so I'm going to tell you a little story about it. There was this once this man. And I thought it was much more effective in the second episode, the second part, where the lawyer talks to, what's the blonde lady's name?
Oh, Portia Doubleday. Angela.
Yeah. Where she's talking to her in the bar, and she talks about the woman that gets approached by a man who offers her money to sleep with him.
Yeah.
Or because that was a really intimate scene between two people in the bar. It's not this guy up on a pedestal doing the soliloquy. Maybe it's just a style thing that I don't like.
Well, it rubbed me the wrong way initially when she started doing it, too. I was like, you guys are doing this kind of thing again. I generally don't like it because it just feels like the writer really wants to make a speech.
It feels very written. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
And it kind of takes me away from it. But I thought that one ended up like resonating so much more because at the end of it, not only does it kind of hit a much more emotional punch into Angela's conscience about like you are kind of selling out what your ideals were.
Right.
But right after that, the guy sits down at the bar next to her and asks her if she's alone. And I was like, see, I just thought there was kind of a clever plot progression with that, and then it ends with her waking up next to him. I was like,
She takes him home, and then what does she do? She goes and does her
self-reaffirmation
mantra. Yeah. And I think Angela, since the beginning, she's one of the most fascinating characters on the show because, you know, you have Elliot, very interesting, very original, fascinating character, but really on the fringes, there's Angela, who is this woman going through so much change in her life. You know, she's just morphing into this different person and really not sure how to do it or if she should do it, and she's really afraid. I think I find that vulnerability very relatable, and I like her character a lot.
Yeah, well, I think Angela was on track to have the normal life. She had the boyfriend, the fiance, you know, she had the job at a, you know, solid basic job, but she was like, she had a nice stable life, and then everything got upended, and now she had to make that choice between whether did she want to be the poor crusading journalist that, you know, is trying to get revenge for her mom, or did she want to go ahead and become like the corporate? She's going that same direction as the woman who we saw, the new lawyer at E-Corp. Like, that's her future path.
Right.
So do you guys think she's a pawn, or do you think that the story is using her to kind of show how one could fall into one path of fighting the system and another one could find great success within the system, I guess.
Well, that's the question. Yeah, is she actually still doing the undercover thing? I feel like she's fallen hook, line, and sinker for the whole E-Corp
thing. Maybe she's trying to change from the inside or whatever.
Yeah,
I think she maybe initially went in trying to change from the inside, but now she's feeding off the fact that they're really stroking her ego there. And the fact that she's finding some success there, which she's never found success before. Right. She's never been held up on a pedestal before. And now she's getting that affirmation finally. So that's intoxicating.
Yeah.
That's intoxicating. So that could mess up her plans to kind of maybe try to change it from the inside. But that's the cool thing about this plot line. There's a huge question mark over it. We don't know why they gave her the job. We don't know why she's there. We don't know why she took it. We don't know what Evil Corp's end game is with her. We don't know what her end game is, right, or even if she has one. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, her storyline is fascinating to me, and I'm surprised how much I'm engaged by it.
So there's a particular character we haven't actually really discussed yet. Mr. Robot himself.
Yes.
Elliot. And wow, it is fascinating.
Yeah.
So he is off the grid. He's away from technology. He is going through a routine which he's hoping will help him try and control his relationship with Christian Slater, Mr. Robot, I guess, as it were. And it's something that they, when you guys were talking about, Randy, you were mentioning, like, where do they go from that first season?
Yeah.
I think this is kind of a bit of a jarring transition that we see Elliot all of a sudden in this whole other life. It's like dropping him into some Pleasantville neighborhood or whatever.
Yeah.
And everything is bizarre and we're playing catch up as the audience. Like, what is this? What's going on?
Right. Well, and there's been a lot made of the Fight Club influence on this show.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of seeing the character being aware of a second personality, that's a really small part of Fight Club. Like, you don't see him to explore it.
Yeah.
So now we start this season where Elliot knows. He knows he's Mr. Robot, and he's sort of confronting that part of himself in a way that we don't usually see. When he puts the gun to his head, when he shoots him in the head, that was such a shocking moment.
Yeah.
And what I love is when he immediately gets up, writes in his journal, "He shot me."
Yeah.
And there's a pause again. And we see that that's just what's been going on. This power struggle has been ongoing.
But it's also kind of peculiar because he's the lead of the show. He's the driving force.
Yeah.
And we've had this main character sort of relegated to a back position because he's not doing anything. He's pushing it forward, while Darlene is actually the one running F-Stop.
Yeah, F-Society.
F-Society.
F-Stop. I feel like the show is becoming and will become more of an ensemble.
I agree.
As we go forward, which I think is going to be a big strength because we're already... What's the first thing we talked about here, pretty much? The first character we really went into depth on was Angela.
Yeah.
You know, who maybe is a second or third tier character, but she got a lot of screen time and her evolution here is really fascinating. Darlene is getting the same kind of treatment too.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing Michael Christopher, who plays Price, being added to the full cast. Last season, he was not a series regular. And
Gideon's going to have a lot to contribute.
I
think they're making room for maybe people like Craig Robinson, you know, Joey Badass, maybe to have more screen time.
We're also seeing more of Joanna Welick, who, by the way,
right.
Stephanie Cornelison is, I believe, my current TV crush. I love the whole...
That she's naked all the time.
The whole crazy controlling thing she's got and the sort of off thing about her, I find it very hot. It's disturbing to me how hot I find that.
Well, she seemed to be the strong, like, power in the relationship between her and Welick as well.
It's great because at first, you know, she's playing the submissive, but she's giving all the orders. It's really cool.
She's definitely the one in control. Yeah.
And so and Welick has been missing so far and all the way up until the last line of the episode.
Yeah. Maybe.
Bonsoir.
Maybe.
I mean, who else would that be, right?
Okay. I want to mention the bonsoir thing because the first thing it made me think of was Hannibal. Remember when Hannibal was in Europe?
Yeah.
And that was the thing he was saying to the dude before he ate him?
Mm.
Remember he kept popping up, he kept falling around, he's like, bonsoir.
This show is full of like references to other shows.
Yeah,
that's true.
I just, I don't think it's a deliberate reference, but I remember there's a weird sort of menace that comes to bonsoir, which I thought was interesting.
So, do you guys want to talk a little bit about Elliot and the theories going on here?
Yes, because... I was about to say, Elliot sort of seems to have deliberately put himself in a loop, but the question is, did he deliberately put himself in a loop, or did someone put him in that loop? Because when we watched the first season of the show, I called very early on the split personality thing. I caught it very early. I was pretty much on.
We made an episode called Randy is Right based
okay,
on it.
Well,
yeah.
The second season of Mr. Robot, I was listening to Mr. Roboto, and they revealed this theory, and I was like, holy shit, I did not see this at all. I didn't, it went right by me, but now it's so good. So the theory is...
Okay, this theory has to be correct, by the way. So if you guys don't want to hear it, jump ahead to the end, or you can end the episode now.
Yeah. I'm not ready to say it's correct. I'm ready to say that I hope maybe does hold a lot of water, but it could just be a stylistic choice. But let's get into the theory.
But the theory is that Elliot is either in an institution or in prison.
Yes.
Because he has fixed meal times. He's always talking to this one dude, Joey Badass, who probably is his cellmate.
Leon.
Grant had the theory that possibly he was his imaginary friend.
I can go into that in a minute.
But he also has the watch him play basketball in the yard, which is the kind of thing you would do in prison.
Mm-hmm.
The mannerisms of his mom, which doesn't make any sense if we live with his mom, are very guard-like. And here's the thing you guys didn't mention on Mr. Roboto that I think is interesting. You kept talking about the knock. We don't know who knocked on his door at the end of season one. But if you go back, that knock, that really aggressive, loud knock, that's a cop knock.
Okay, I see where you're coming from. But if you rewatch the season one again, like I have 4,000 times.
Yep, I trust you on this.
Okay. Every time somebody knocks at the door, it sounds like a fucking cop knock.
That's actually true.
Yeah, it sounds like three people banging on the door in one scene.
It's one knock.
And it's just Shayla.
Yeah.
It's just this little 90-pound girl.
That's just what his door sounds like.
That's just what his door sounds like, or that's what he thinks the door sounds like because he's so paranoid.
Yeah, maybe so. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought that might have been a clue. That was the cops coming to nab him for his part in the 5-9 hack.
That would make sense, though. I was already calling it that it was going to be Grace Gummer's character, mm-hmm. the FBI investigator we see in the second episode of season two. I was like, okay, it would make sense if it's a new character being introduced, knocking at the door, but we still don't know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Gideon has that, he stops by to talk to him.
And it looks like a prison visit.
It feels like a prison visit. Yeah. He stays on one side of the table and there's the mom, like a guard, like kind of like monitoring from the background. And he feels very guarded about everything he can say there.
And Krista Gordon, Gloria Rubin's character, mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like, you guys made this point on Mr. Roboto, that the reason she would come back to him after the horrible shit he did to her, really, is if they, you know, someone in the prison system reached out and said, look, you've got a history with this kid. We need you to be his prison shrink.
Yeah, because she obviously felt extremely violated by what he did to her in season one. So I don't think she would feel comfortable inviting him back into her practice.
Right.
So if he was behind bars, forced to be there in a control situation, and she did really want to help him, which I believe she does, I think she would feel safer doing that. So yeah, there's more evidence that he might be behind bars or in a more controlled situation.
And then if the prison thing is true, mm-hmm. that brings something interesting up about Craig Robinson's character. Who, when he shows up, I noticed that right away they had other characters talk to him first. Like, they did not want us thinking that he was part of Elliot's delusions. They wanted to establish very clearly that he's his own character. He's not part of Elliot's head. But if he's in prison...
But he also seems to gain a certain degree of respect.
Yeah.
Which might indicate that he's a guard.
Maybe.
Or the warden or something.
Or something like that, yeah.
So, okay.
But
go ahead.
He has a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys suggested that possibly he was a service dog, but I wonder if it's not a dog, if it's basically his prison bitch, and that's how Elliot is framing it, if it's a dude.
Oh, man. It's a bitch.
That sounds very Sam Esmaeli. So,
right?
yeah, that could be it, yeah.
Or it could be a guard dog, if he's
a guard. Could be a guard, a dog.
But here's the other thing. So, we have this encounter. What's his name? Joey Badass? Leon?
Yeah.
His buddy Leon, who he sits at a table, he's sitting with a guy who's always talking and never needs to be talked to.
Yep.
This is very similar to kind of his relationship with Christian Slater.
Yeah.
And it could stand to reason that he had another sort of psychotic break and a personality split again.
You think while he was watching Seinfeld, he had a personality split off?
And Leon acts as a different side of his personality that... is able to kind of help him cope in prison.
Yeah.
The TV nerd.
a little bit TV nerd, a little bit enjoys watching basketball and stands up for himself. But there's that scene where he stands up to that other guy, Joey Badass does, because the ball comes over there. And if you watch the transition when Craig Robinson comes in, he's talking to him, and then he Joey Badass, or Leon, he's talking to this guy, and then he walks away from the situation, kind of, yeah. And they do like this little look exchange, like almost like he's like transferring, like, okay, now it's your turn to talk. And it seems like Craig Robinson's acknowledging him until that switch, and then he looks right at Elliot. So I don't know. It seems like it could be like they did this before in the first season. Why couldn't they have?
I won't rule it out, but I don't. I think Leon's real.
I hope we don't have to go on this season trying to guess if every character is real. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's just going to get frustrating.
Well,
for me.
Whole situation, we can't tell if it's real.
Yeah. True. True.
Here's some more interesting theories to kind of feed into that.
Yep.
In the beginning of the second episode, we hear the song Take Me Home by Phil Collins.
Yeah.
And that song was actually written about leaving a mental institution.
Oh, interesting.
And it was based off of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Hmm.
When Rami Malek was asked to describe his character in one word, he said committed. Take that one as a pun.
But that could easily be committed to a prison, too.
Yeah. Committed to an asylum, whatever.
So I feel like this is kind of like season one, where everybody kind of guessed that Mr. Robot wasn't real in like the first, second, third episode.
Yeah.
I think everybody's kind of maybe on point here.
Yeah.
And Sam Esmail is probably going to come out and say, well, yeah, I mean, you're supposed to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like he did in the first season.
Yeah.
So yeah, because either this is a really bold stylistic choice, and I would love that. I would love it if it's just a stylistic choice.
Yeah, it's metaphorical prison, but not an actual prison.
Exactly. Yeah, I would love that. Either that's the case, or yeah, you know, Elliot's just kind of warping his mind to change his surroundings to kind of cope with the situation.
Because there's something so surreal about him staying in this neighborhood. Who is this Leon guy that he is sitting with and eating two meals a day with?
Yeah.
Like, at the same place?
Yeah.
It all just fits this larger scheme. And
I think it does.
It's brilliant, and it's also kind of fun that, like, fans already are kind of peeling this apart.
Yeah. So I kind of think it's maybe not prison, and maybe it's more of a mental institution.
Like he checked himself in or something?
Maybe he's forced to be there. But, you know, but because I guess you could call it co-ed, because we do see this character, Hot Carla, in there.
That's right.
And she's burning a book. She's burning Waiting for Godot, right? She's a fire starter. I think he calls her my personal totem, you know?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So there's a woman there.
I forgot about Hot Carla.
I think she's played by a trans actress.
Okay.
I think it's a trans woman. But, you know...
That's a little bit different if it's a trans woman in a male prison.
I guess so, but don't they... Aren't trans women
trans
put
women
in...
Trans women generally in women's prisons,
in women's
believe,
prisons, yeah.
You could certainly see it's like... If it's not actually a trans... If it's not actually a trans woman, if it is a... more of a cross-dressing guy in the prison.
Okay, yeah.
And that they're doing a filter, like that's how he sees her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. My main thing with prison versus mental institution is the basketball games.
Right.
The basketball games seem very much more a prison yard thing than a mental institution thing.
But what did he go to prison for?
The 5'9" hack.
I think he actually got busted.
I feel like he got caught. Yeah.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think he got busted because remember at the end of season one, this guy who was scamming the therapist got a bunch of dirt on him and said, I'm going to go to cops with this.
Oh, that's right.
So he might have gotten busted for something a little smaller.
Yeah,
you know?
And they realized, oh, wait, he's crazy.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was having his big psychotic break around then.
And because Gideon came to him and said, I'm going to tell them everything I know. So stands to reason that the government has not fingered Elliot for the 5'9" hack if Gideon still had information.
Yeah, you're right.
That could burn him.
That makes more sense.
Okay, here's a fun little TV trivia note as well. When Leon's talking to him about the Seinfeld episodes, he references two very particular episodes. The one that's all in the Chinese restaurant and the other one that's all in the parking garage.
Yep.
Both of those are bottle episodes.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Bottle episodes... In reference to Elliot's situation, where we think he's going to all these other different places, but he's all actually in one location.
That's
he's
true.
All in an asylum.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many nods.
Yeah, there's lots of nods.
They're just so smart about it.
The thing I love is that it could easily just be Sam Esmail fucking with us.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's really
more elegant if this is actually what his design was.
I think it would also be elegant if he's really just going for this strong stylistic choice and not necessarily fucking with us, but doing what's interesting to him and layering it so much.
Yeah. Yeah, it could easily be a metaphorical prison. I think that's entirely possible.
I'm not ready to come down on yes or no on this. And, you know, I've never really have been with this show. With this show, there's a few shows that I just cannot guess on what's going to happen or what theory is correct. Back in the day, it was Veronica Mars, because that thing just went left to center every time.
Yeah.
And this one, I just do not know what's going to happen, what theory is going to be correct. And that really is what one of the big things that makes it so compelling to me. I just have to watch.
So what do you think about that phone call at the end then? Is it Tyrell? Why is he calling a prison?
In my heart, I hope it's Tyrell because I love Tyrell Wellick. Martin Wallstrom is awesome. I think he's the new Patrick Bateman. I love every scene he's in. I want to see him because right now the whole world is looking for him. He has slimed himself into the biggest corner, and I want to see him fight out of there. You know, yeah. So I hope we get to see that story. I don't know if it's him or not. There's a lot of weirdness with that phone call.
Yeah.
If Elliot's in the prison, how is Tyrell calling the prison? There's a weird kind of filter over the phone audio.
Yeah.
There's like a bunch of clicks and stuff. It sounds like a recorded tape or something.
Yeah. I know this is not the case. There's still a part of me that wants to believe that Tyrell Wellick is Elliot.
What?
I kept the whole first season thinking, wait a minute, is this another personality of Elliot? Is he actually in this job? Because if he doesn't really sleep, if whenever he goes to sleep another personality takes over, he could be Tyrell Wellick and Elliot at the same time. I think there's a 1%
chance. Did he interview himself in that first episode?
Yeah. I'm just saying that would explain how all of a sudden Mr. Robot can give him access to him.
I don't think they're
there's no way. This is not an actual theory. This is just my little private thought of how cool that would be.
You know, thematically,
everyone's Elliot.
Thematically, they are flip sides to each other.
Yeah.
They are mirror images to each other. And there's that really beautiful cinematic scene at the beginning of the season two premiere where Elliot is sitting at the computer terminal and it's all one shot. It follows Tyrell to it. And really without speaking, Elliot gets up.
Yeah.
Tyrell takes his place. Elliot walks back. And you kind of feel like they're in the zone together, like they could be the same person.
Yeah.
I don't think they're the same person, you know, they do have, you know, parallel characteristics.
And it leaves off with it menacing because he's reaching into the popcorn machine that we all know with guns in there.
Maybe he was just getting popcorn.
Maybe he was just like, man, I'm hungry.
Now, the other thing is that when Joanna first sees Elliot or Les sees Elliot in season one, she acts kind of weird around him. And that's when I started to think, wait a minute, is that her husband? And she knows he has two personalities, and she knows he's not the right personality, so she's just kind of treating him different. Like I say, I don't really think this.
Why are you still giving credence?
There are things that make me think it when I'm watching it.
I think she just knows more about like what's going on with him because Tyrell probably tells her everything. She's the puppeteer.
That's probably what the case is, that she knows more about Elliot. There's something else there.
But she also speaks to him in Danish or Swedish or whatever language she speaks in that scene, which is weird.
Yeah.
Oh my God. She's Tyrell Wellick.
She's so freaky. I love
so
her.
We didn't talk about Gideon, except for to just kind of go,
Gideon.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But that should be the last one we kind of wrap up on, because that was sad and it was actually kind of unexpected.
Legitimately shocking. I did not see that coming.
Me neither. That's fucked up. I like Gideon.
Yeah. And it was such a sad sack of a character, kind of dragged through terrible situations by means outside of his control, it seems like.
So that was just a crazy person who shot him, right? This isn't somebody like using him as a patsy, finishing him off.
They said patsy a bunch.
I know.
I think it's
just a crazy person.
Well, it's just somebody who had this really twisted political motive, you know, and wanted to kill somebody because of it, which, fuck, this show is really on the pulse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shooting in a bar. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. See, they're not afraid to kill off characters on the show. Like, I'm still mourning Shayla. I still miss Shayla.
Yeah. In fact, the shooting in the bar, they had last season, they had the Ashley Madison hack.
Yeah.
And they also had the journalist getting killed on TV. That meant they had to, like, delay airing episodes.
Yeah.
Because that was when that went down.
Yeah, they're a little too on top of things.
Yeah.
And that's probably partly because SML's so tapped into the zeitgeist.
Or he's planning it.
Or he's from the future.
He's making things happen in real life.
He's a lizard person.
He's a lizard person.
Yeah.
And he's Tal Rebellic.
Well, I think we know who to thank for our future President Trump then. Thanks a lot, Sam. All right. Well, I guess we can wrap it up there. Do you guys have any other closing thoughts?
I don't.
I can't wait to watch more. We're going to have... Do you guys read Tor.com?
No.
Okay, great science fiction site. We're going to have Karen Cross, who writes for Tor.com. She wrote this great article on how Mr. Robot is resurrecting the cyberpunk genre.
Oh,
and she's going to be on Mr. Roboto this week. So if you're into that, check it out.
Nice.
Awesome. And yeah, while you're at it, first off, thank you so much for being on our show, Mike.
Thank you for inviting me.
Where can people find your stuff again?
You can find my Mr. Robot podcast at MrRobotPodcast.com and TVIPodcast.com.
And on iTunes. You guys go there. It's pretty big on iTunes, we see.
Yeah. Oh, it's getting there, yeah.
I'm going to toot your horn for you. Okay. It's doing great. It's a great show.
You right. While you're there, you should write a review. And write a review of Mr. Roboto. And hey, while you're writing reviews, you can write a review of the TV Dudes.
There you go.
You're so self-serving.
Five stars.
But yeah, once again, thank you for being here. And thank you to the listening audience. We appreciate all of the support you guys have given us. And be sure to check in on our Patreon exclusive this week. If you guys aren't patrons yet, go become a patron. We try to make it very worth your while.
Yeah, there's going to be bonus content coming up pretty soon because patrons are going to get an early look at Beach Cop Detectives, a Terrier's podcast. Did you think a whole episode was going to go by?
I was curious. I wasn't going to bring it up again, but
without me promoting Beach Cop Detectives, a Terrier's podcast, which the second episode of which has our good friend Mr. Mike Moody on it with me.
That's right. I had a good time.
It is in process. We're going to be recording fourth episode this week. We're getting to the point where we're going to get ready to release it. So look for it in late August, hopefully.
Awesome. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up everything now. And until next week.
You can do it.
No! That's not enough!
No!
I forgot. What is it?
TV Dudes out.
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast. It is exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and on Twitter at TV Dudes, and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.